My name is Barry Castle. I work in Link Technical Marketing. And you're joining this session because it's all about TCO. The way we got started with this project was just a realization that we needed to refresh all of the materials that we were providing both to our customers as well as our partners and field representatives, that we needed to sort of bring our knowledge and our understanding of the market's characteristics as well as the profile of Link. So that was the project. We wanted to do this in a very vendor independent way. So we approached this by kind of scanning the market, looking for the best talent that's out there, the folks that are doing head-to-head comparisons, but who absolutely retain their independence when they do that. I'm pleased to announce that today I'm joined with Brent Kelly, Marty Parker. Together, they represent more or less the state of the art of the industry in terms of TCO. Marty, for example, chairs the TCO analysis that's carried out every year at the Enterprise Connect trade show that takes place in a month's time this year. These guys have worked absolutely independently. I tried, as you can imagine, to influence them every step of the way.
That would be true.
They would have nothing of it, and they've retained their independence, which is great. So they've done a TCO analysis of Link on-prem. They've done Link Online. They've looked at an IP PBX manufacturer whose names were held, and they've also looked at that vendor's cloud offering, and they're going to bring you the results of that analysis. Over to you guys.
Great. Thank you, Barry. I'm Marty Parker, and this is Brent Kelly. We'll introduce ourselves a bit more. You see our names on the slide. But our objectives for this session are to review the total cost of ownership of Microsoft Link, as Barry said, and discuss how this information may inform decisions that you or your clients, some of you or consultants, may need to make. So we're going to follow this agenda: who we are, what we do, then why a TCO study, how we approached it, what are the components, then the comparisons, and then what it means. So let's talk about who we are, what we do. So I'll start, and then Brent will join in. Unicom Consulting, that's me. Kelcor Inc. is Brent. We're independent consultants, both of us. Brent is also an analyst and a well-published analyst. I primarily work in the consulting to large enterprises about their unified communication roadmap. And many of our clients are asking about total cost. Either they hire us as part of our engagement, they ask us to develop the total cost, or they say, what do you know about it besides market share? I'd like to know the facts. And so, as Barry said, when he knocked on the door, we said, yes, we would be excited to do that. As to leading the RFPs, the TCO, or actually RFP comparisons at Enterprise Connect, is something that I share one session with mine, one with Brent, and another gentleman, Dave Stein, and Brent's going to describe that further to you. We're independent. I belong to the Society of Telecommunications Consultants, and you know we have an ethics code about that topic. We don't resell anything, so we don't make anything with our clients by recommending something over another. That's the level that we maintain on our part. So Brent, introduce yourself, and then I'll put you up and give you the clicker.
Thanks. Actually, I don't know that I'll need the clicker too much, but so my name is Brent Kelly. I am the principal and principal analyst at Kelcor. I've been an analyst for quite some time, and I have a question I'm going to ask you, if I may. So I was sitting in a room yesterday with a bunch of end users who are deploying Link, and there was kind of like this mantra of machoism: how many Link conferences have you attended? How many have is this their first one? First Link conference. Okay, all right. How many have been to two Link conferences? All two of them. Okay, and this is where I really got them. How many of you have started your journey with Microsoft and this whole collaborative, I guess we're going to call it now universal collaboration, right? That's the new term. How many of you started with Link 2010? Okay, we're going to go back even farther. Okay, Office Communications Server 2007, 2005. Okay, I'm going to get you. How about LCS 2003?
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Okay, so we're in good company. That's where I started with this too. So I've been doing this for a long time. I've been looking at this technology for a long time. It is a real pleasure to be able to speak to you today about the TCO of this solution versus some big major IP PBX company that some of us know.
You're next.
Oh, I'm next. Okay.
Talk about the...
Okay, so why did we do this study? So there's been some reference to the work that Marty and I and our third colleague in the industry, Dave Stein, have done at Enterprise Connect. And for those of you that don't know Enterprise Connect, it's kind of the industry trade show for telecom where all of the vendors get together, unlike this one where this is Microsoft-centric. Okay? And so the scenario there is we have written RFPs. And as the market has changed, initially there was just one RFP, and it said, if you want an on-prem communication system, what should you buy? And then there were 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 companies that would respond. And they're companies you would know, Avaya, Cisco, ShoreTel, Siemens, Alcatel-Lucent, and so forth. It's these names you would know. But with time, there were some changes that occurred. And so back about 4 years ago, I started doing one on the cloud because people were starting to think about centralization and virtualization. And once you think about those two things, well, then you begin thinking about cloud because it doesn't really matter where your hardware assets are. And so I did one on cloud several years ago, and Marty did one on what we call overlay solutions. And an overlay is where you keep your existing PBX and you overlay that with something like Link or, heaven forbid, IBM. Same time people here. Okay, or you can overlay it with an Avaya solution or so forth. So that's the environment that we have been in, and we have looked at lots and lots of these solutions. I would say probably 35 or 40 over the past few years. Yep. In minute detail, like how many buttons are on the phones, you know, that kind of minute detail. Okay, so there were some really interesting things that we found, and a couple of those are listed here on this slide. And I'll show you something a little more graphic on the next one. But the idea here is, in general, the cloud-based solutions, even though folks often say that they're less expensive, once you normalize those and put in all the operating costs and so forth, typically they're not. The on-prem solutions still, in general, are less expensive, although that's not always the case. Okay? Let's look at this slide. There's some names here you would know if you look across the bottom. And the dash P names are the ones that are premises-based. The C, the dash C, are the ones that are cloud-based, and the dash O are these overlay solutions. Okay, so you probably have never seen a graph like this because we're the only ones that have made one that's this detailed that I'm aware of. Okay, and I see somebody taking a picture, so I removed the numbers off the left-hand side. Sorry. No, that's okay. That's okay. I'm just teasing you. So you don't know how many millions of dollars those are, okay? But this is for a 2,000-person system, okay? And if you call me after, I can tell you what the numbers are, all right? Okay. But this is the kind of work that we've done. I think it helps qualify, and hopefully it sets in your mind some of the background experience that Marty and I have in looking at these systems in this level of detail. And so with that, I think I'll turn it over to Marty. Oh, one other thing. These little arrows here, this is where Microsoft solutions are. And you can see that this, it's an anomaly. It looks like the overlay solution all the way to the right is almost as expensive as its on-premises solution. And there's some reasons for that, some of which we may or may not
know. Well, that particular year, I'll just say, so that particular year, Office 365 was available, and Microsoft refused to bid a premise solution as an overlay. They say, we're only going to bid Office 365. So that's a cloud price in a premise crowd.
Yeah. Okay.
But the premise, the on-premise price, by the way, I actually did it myself as part of my session, was just above Avaya and NEC. It was down in that range. So premise was a different answer.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So per Barry's comments, this was completely unbiased. As hard as Microsoft and the other vendor wanted to influence us, we did not allow that to happen as best we could, okay? And so what we're going to do is we're going to go through a little bit about the model, some of the philosophy behind it, and we'll show you some of the numbers, okay?
And I'll say, just to add to what Brent said, that notice that line, divergent sources, surveys, and opinions. There are analyst firms out there that are addressing this by running surveys of their base, and the survey results come back all over the map.
Right.
We're going to talk about that when we get to the numbers later, too. But some of you have said this, and I'd say there's more confusion being introduced than clarity by some of the things that are going on. So next we're going to talk about the approach to the study. I'll do this and talk about the components, and then Brent will come back and give you the details. So one of the things we did is we adopted a methodology that works really well for us in our consulting practices. Is we said we're going to define usage profiles. So the model actually, we built a model. I don't know if you've gathered that. We built a model. Brent did the coding. We defined the model together. And the model has in it usage profiles. The numbers you'll see are actually built off this particular manufacturing profile, but we have other industries in it. And so we said across the top row, you see what percentage of the employees, and this model will range, as Brent will tell you, across a number, what percentage are executives or highly mobile, like sales and service, or collaborative workers, like product developers and so forth, or support workers, like the admin staff and order processing, or task workers like manufacturing. So it's that category. You've seen Microsoft use terms like this over the past few years, although not usually five of them, usually three of them. And then we say what each of those roles will consume in terms of IM, presence, federation, desk phone, soft phone, mobile smartphone client, and so forth. And then we say what type of phone will they have if they have a phone. So if you look at task workers, you'll see that only 15% of them will have a desk phone. And if they have a desk phone, it's going to be a single line phone. So, and then the model behind it has tables that populate this according to what types of phones you choose. So this is how we built the model behind what we're going to show you here.
Could I just make a comment?
Yeah, please do.
That also determines the licenses that you're going to buy.
Right.
It's the Microsoft licenses, plus it determines the other companies,
PBX licenses.
The PBX licenses. So this framework here is exceedingly important.
And some of the vendors out there, for example, Cisco has quite a range. They've got five different basically license types across UCL, Unified Client Licensing, and cool, Cisco Unified Workplace Licensing. So you got to understand what you're buying in order to figure out this TCO. The alternative, by the way, is the vendor just sells the customer whatever they'll buy, and they all end up with Cool Pro. Everybody gets a Cool Pro license, and you wouldn't need that, right? Or everybody gets a Plus Cal. They don't all need that.
Right.
So use the standard sizes and workloads. So we actually went and got, as it says down below, configured these systems exactly at 500 users, 5,000 users, and 50,000 users. And Brent built the model to interpolate between those sizes. So we can put any number between that range into the model and get a very precise TCO back, and we built it in a stack, modular workloads. So the model starts down at the level of IM presence, adds conferencing, and you can adds conferencing in, adds in enterprise voice, which you can turn on or off. Contact center can be turned on or off, and video room systems can be turned on or off. So we can reconfigure and redesign and test assumptions in these different categories. The usage profiles, we said, define the requirements, and then we used vendor tools. We worked with a well-known IPPBX VAR. We worked with the Microsoft Link configurators. We worked with the tools people have to get to the right configurations, and we went back and validated these and said, okay, these are the right assumptions. Check us. Tell us not. If not, and so we're confident there. We looked at both premises and cloud options, okay, and we calculated or estimated installation and operational costs below that, and that's going to be important. We'll come back to that. And then we applied discounts based on company size, because we see a lot of competitive bids out in the marketplace, so we know approximately what the vendors are offering in terms of discounts depending on your size. And by the way, the discounts will vary between hardware and software. So we think we've captured all of that. Now you may say, well, how did you do enterprise voice in the cloud with Microsoft? And the answer to that is we went to a well-known provider of enterprise voice. In fact, it's Connect Solutions, and Matt Porter is sitting right here. And how did you do contact center, since Microsoft doesn't have a contact center? And we chose Interactive Intelligence, both for the premise and for the cloud. And we chose Interactive Intelligence because we wanted this to be as realistic as we could in the gunfights we see at the executive levels over TCO. And I know there's a lot of creativity being built on top of the Link platform with contact center. My partner Don Van Doren is doing a session right now and again on Thursday morning about that. But we didn't want to say, well, we got a really low-cost contact center, so your TCO is really low based on this startup. Interactive Intelligence is not a startup. They're one of the most profitable and fast-growing companies in this industry in the face of PBX vendors that are struggling to have revenue. So, you know, we think we've got the right representation. And for the room system, we use Crestron as a link room system provider. So, you know, we've got those kinds of things built in. Obviously, it's a model. Other things could be substituted.
Could I add two more
vendors? Please.
So likely you're going to need an SBC, some kind of a session border controller.
A session border controller should say that, too.
So we used audio codes for that. You're going to need some hardware to run this on. And so we used HP servers. And for different reasons, we did not virtualize those. They're individual servers with individual workloads.
Right. And in the IPPBX case, since all the IPPBX vendors are buzzed on VM, we use that vendor's particular model, okay, for these different, and it varied by size. Okay, so then that's how we did it. What do we have in here is the TCO components. I'm going to talk quickly about this just conceptually, and then Brent will go into details. So we've got three categories that we crank out. One is initial purchase costs, and you can see the rows there. Server software, software CALs, total hardware, total contact. Hardware includes phones, by the way, in that case. Total contact center. And then video conferencing, our room system hardware, and then implementation costs. So that's our front end. Then we go to life cycle, this is a five-year model, total cost of ownership. Server software maintenance support, total CAL maintenance and support, hardware support, video conferencing, contact center, if they're in there, what those support costs look like. And if it's a hosted solution, all the hosted money, the recurring charges, went on that first line of server software maintenance and support. And then the bottom one is recurring operating costs. And this is rack space costs, personnel costs, power costs. We actually looked at the power consumptions of the different models and so forth. Total annual bandwidth costs. Now, contact center, we didn't go into the full contact center bandwidth load because we didn't have a calling model we wanted to estimate, but we do have the differences in bandwidth between, say, the Microsoft codec models and the IPPBX codec models, and they're different and they produce different numbers. And then total SIP trunking costs. So those are in there. Notice the side note is essential for comparison of premise versus hosted. If you don't put this latter category in, you cannot compare premise to hosted. Because what hosted does is it converts your in-house staff and costs into part of the monthly fee. So you're basically trading those costs. Otherwise, it won't work. So as to discounts, this one's pretty important. The analysis has a switch in it. The model has a switch in it. We can estimate the Microsoft costs either based on Microsoft CALs with discounts plus software assurance, or Microsoft Enterprise Agreement subscriptions. How many of you are buying your Microsoft licenses as EA subscriptions today? EAS. There's one, two, three. Okay. Well, you should talk to your Microsoft account team. EAS, basically, you don't get a perpetual license. If you stop paying your annual fee, you stop using the software. It's not like you buy once and you can use it forever until, you know, just the servers drop into the ground. But EA, reflective of Microsoft's interest in the cloud, because the EA subscription is similar in pricing to the cloud, is a significant discount. We're going to show you some numbers in a minute, compared to buying enterprise CALs with SA. And the representative PBX option is discounted, as I said, by size. Servers, Brent already told you that. And then operating costs. So we've got an allocation in here. Here's the number. We've validated this in several ways. For example, we've said how many servers does a single DBA support? And my clients have ratios, okay? So many servers per DBA is the way they say it, or a fraction of a DBA per server. And how much, you know, I have to pay for a system architect to run this thing. I'll have a manager. I've got some NOC costs, and then I will also have help desk costs. So we've got, based on what we think is a pretty valid survey by Aberdeen Research, we have $214,000 per 1,000 employees per year, or $214 per user per year to operate the system, plus another $50,000 or $50 per employee per year to operate, per 1,000 employees, to operate the help desk for Link. And for Cisco, we put it with a 25% premium on that because the Cisco stack is such that you have to administer each application separately. And we think that is going to produces a higher call rate to a help desk. So we put a premium on that. But otherwise, the IPPBX, I keep saying that name, but IPPBX and the, it's not on the charts though, the IPPBX and the link comparison have the same for operating because the server counts are pretty similar. The number of cores you need is pretty similar. Okay, now, so just a few more from me and then to Brent for results.
So Marty, before you go to this, with respect to all these costs and things that you see here, all these are variables and they can be changed. And so, for example, if one of you had some costs that you knew that were different, then we can run the model in a different way based on what you actually see at your organization, for example.
Right. And of course, I mean, that's the same point. We can't tell you how you're running your internal operations or your NOC or whatever. So these are the numbers that you see for the assumptions on the left side of the screen. 5-year TCO, 5,000 users on-premise with no contact center, no group room video, and without EAS licensing, then what you see is the total cost for that 5 years is $4.867 million, okay, before operating costs. That's the total. And so therefore, the big number is going to be the CAL and server software maintenance, and the second biggest number is going to be licensing. And then if I put in the operating costs, these $214,000 per 1,000 users per year adds up to $6.6 million. So the total bottom line is $12 million, 12.4, of which, come on, there it is, that's what I wanted. So the biggest number, 53% of it, is the operating costs. So, you know, it's funny how the industry is rattling around about the price of the software, of the servers and price of the software, when actually it's that operating cost that's the biggest number. And then, of course, maintenance comes in number two and license acquisition number three. I have one more chart here, but if I convert this to EAS, notice at the top left it now says EAS, subscription. Now my total bottom line for Link is $9.6 million, and I basically took $2.8 million out of the licensing costs for 5 years by converting it to a subscription. Granted, at the end of the 5 years, you still have to pay. You don't own the license, but it still is a significant difference. And now, of course, the operating personnel costs are 69% of the total. So as I take the cost of hardware and of software down, which they will do over time, I mean, that's how this industry works, operating costs are going to become your main concern. So with that, I've told you kind of how it was built very well by Brent, I'll say. But let's hear from Brent about some of the comparisons.
Okay, thank you. So have what we said so far, does that make sense? Are you seeing operating costs that are kind of like that? Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Let's see, would you be willing to stand up to the mic? I believe the session's being recorded.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
We must hear Mr. Michaels' question. This is Dave Michaels.
I got a question about the EAS. It's
yes.
quite a big savings, as you showed. Do you recommend that to your customers or the clients you work with? It seems like even if after 5 years, if you were going to turn it off and throw it all out and replace it, that it might take you a year to do that, and you'd have to, at least if you own the equipment, you can just stop the subscriptions and the maintenance and work that migration. So just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's going to depend upon you as an organization, how it is that you're structured. There may be some organizations that still want to do the software assurance and buy the CALs for different reasons, okay? And if you know that you're going to be a Microsoft shop, you've been a Microsoft shop, it seems like the EAS tends to make sense over those longer terms. I grant you, at the end of life, if you're going to make a decision like that, then there could be an issue. Yeah. Marty,
my counterpoint would be, Dave, that that it may be, but if I went to the sixth year and I looked, by the way, there is no maintenance with EAS. It's all in the number. the right to use, I won't say the license, the right to use and the support are all in one number. So, some of the IPPBX vendors are starting to offer subscription plans as well. And I think this is reflective of their view that the cloud is the future and all pricing will be monthly or annual. So this may be a trend, not just a, I understand your question, but it may also be a reflection of a trend.
Right. Okay. Please.
Okay, just a question around the 6.6 million. Mm-hmm. Is that net new hires, or is that existing FTEs retraining or taking over, or... And then how does that compare to the existing sunk cost if you're running a regular PBX? Because MACDs in Link are a lot less than they are in a regular PBX.
Okay. So I will tell you where we got the number. Okay? So as Marty said, there's been some survey work that's been done by several different analyst firms. And the interesting thing is, as we were looking at that, one shows that the IPPBX vendor costs a lot more than Microsoft. The other one shows they cost a lot less. And there's one from one company that in one part it shows they cost more and in another part it shows they cost less. So it's a little schizophrenic there on that one. So what this represents is these are the average costs from what we could find available in the literature in the industry as to what it will cost you if you deploy one of these solutions. There's no magic to where these came from, and I don't know that I can go into more detail. Is it new hires? Is it, you know, is it FTEs? It's just the number that's been reported. Okay. Marty, do you have any clarification on that?
Yeah, I will add that with our clients, so it's the number of people assigned, mm-hmm. and usually it won't be, it'll be a peak of hiring, and then it'll be a normalization over time through attrition or reassignment, because you got to run the current PBX while you put in a new IPPBX. Sometimes you can hire a contractor to do that peak load for you, but we recommend that you take your existing employees and train them up and hire the contractor to run the old thing so you get the new skills. But whether it's Link or a new IPPBX, there's an overlap during conversion, and then there's a run rate. And the run rate's driven by the number of servers, because remember, these servers, whether you can stack them all in a virtual machine, but you still have to run them, you have to update them, you got to virus check them, you got to support them, you got to follow the release plans every quarter, as Gurdeep said this morning, and the other vendors are doing that too. You've got to keep training these people. You probably have a system architect on top of it, you probably have a supervisor on top of it, and then you have your help desk. Now, the help desk costs will come down because you're typically letting users self-provision their phones versus the old desktop telephone tech. And often a smart company, we'll say more about this, will merge the two help desks, telecom and desktop. But in the end, most of our clients, and there's some companies out there that survey this in the IT industry, there's a ratio of DBAs per servers. Right. And at 5,000 users, we have 43 servers for Link and 44 for the IPPBX. Right. And, you know, you run 44 servers, it costs something.
So that's 6.6, you could actually see it as a curve.
That's over 5 years. It's one point, little over 1.3 a year.
Like a curve as such, because at a certain point it will start coming down.
We did not decline that curve. No, okay. We didn't because the servers are going to be released. They're the releases, the virus checks, the intrusions, all those things, the integration to the network. It's going to be an annual. It's going to be a monthly thing. It goes on.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's a shocking number to me. I keep worrying about it, but we keep trying to validate it, and the validations are not far off.
Your questions are good. Would it be kind of a curve that goes like this? You know, honestly, I think there needs to be more work in the industry to find out that question. And one of the issues is when you go to a company. So suppose I were to come to your company, could you tell me? Really, could you tell me how much it really costs, and you know, how do they charge it, and so forth? And so, we've done the best that we felt like we could for now. I'm not saying it's perfect. Does that make sense?
And we've checked it against various clients of ours, and it's not out of line.
Right.
So, by the way, PowerShell is a big move, and that, you know, that helps a lot. But on the other hand, some of the IPPX, PBX guys are improving their game for I'll call it management software too.
Right.
Okay.
I guess the bottom line is that's a huge cost.
It is.
Whether or not the curve goes like this or whether it's flat, kind of like we did it, if there's ways to reduce that cost, you should be looking for those. That's really the takeaway. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Other comments or questions before we move on and show you some more numbers? So I'm an engineer by training.
He is.
and I have a PhD in engineering. And so I don't know if anybody caught on to this, but have you noticed that we have 500, 5,000, and 50,000? And if you take the log of those, what do you have? We have a straight line, don't
straight
we?
Straight line, that's right.
So, I mean, I just kind of think like this. And what you're going to see here next are some of the results of what we've done. All right, so here's the first case. So this is where you deploy the whole stack. And when I say the whole stack, you have IAM in presence, you have conferencing, and you have enterprise voice. Now, we didn't do one just on IAM in presence alone, and here's the reason. I'm going to be as blunt as I know how. People just give that away. Okay? You buy one Cisco license, and you get Jabber for everybody in your company, okay, for the cost of one license. Oh, I won't
one
say...
One license and two servers.
Yeah, one license and two servers. I guess I shouldn't say Microsoft gives that away, but there has been some significant incentives for people to deploy IAM in presence. And so we didn't price that out alone because we didn't see that that would be interesting to anybody. So here's the on-premises solutions. Again, this is 5,000, and we can scale the model up and down. And the reason that we can do that is because really where the biggest costs are, they're in the licensing, right? And they're in the personnel and so forth. They're not in the hardware. That slide that Marty showed a minute ago, 4% of the total cost was hardware. And I don't care if it's the servers like we did, you know, individual servers, or if it's virtualized, it's going to be roughly a small percentage. Okay? So you can see here, here's 5,000 users, you get the whole stack. And you see Microsoft on the left, and you see the on-prem PBX. And this is using the enterprise voice the EAS licensing, okay? And so you'll see that it's less expensive. Had we used software assurance and just bought the CALs, the Microsoft offering would have been more expensive. Slightly more expensive, okay? So in this case, I think the savings is like, how much money was that? It was $2.8 million. I think you said.
Right, that's the difference.
Yeah, about $2.8 million was the difference. And you'll see that that shows up in the graph. Now, in this case, the Link on-premises solution is 15% favorable to the competitive solution, again, using EAS. On the right side, this is the cloud-based solutions, okay? And for the competitive cloud on the IPPBX, there are some vendors that offer that particular solution, and I guess I won't mince words. This is an HCS solution, okay, from Cisco. And so because Marty and I have done all this work with cloud-based providers and we have all this RFP data and so forth, that's where we got these numbers, was from a couple of these vendors that have responded with HCS types of solutions. In addition to that, where we got the operating numbers for things like network costs, long distance dialing, and so forth, again, because we know what these cloud providers cost, we know what LD costs, long distance, and so forth. So that's how we're able to wrap these costs in, because we know what they charge. So at the bottom right, I need to make sure that you understand what you're seeing here. It says on-premises versus cloud. So this is Link on-prem versus Link cloud. For 5,000 users, you use the EAS licensing, and the on-premises solution is about 26% favorable to the Link cloud. Please.
When you say cloud,
do you mind speaking in the mic so that everybody can hear? They're recording the session.
When you speak about cloud, mm-hmm. you're talking about also the voice on the cloud or the voice on-premise, you know?
The voice is in the cloud.
In the cloud.
Yes. So how we did that with Link is we priced Office 365 for IAM in presence and conferencing. And then we know of some providers who will interface with that, and they offer a hosted Link voice solution. And the company we use, they're here in the audience, Connected Solutions. They're right here. Okay. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, no, it's because, well, I work in Brazil, and we still don't have, we don't know exactly when the voice online is going to be implemented, so.
Right. Okay. Well, that may change the market when that happens, and they announced this morning that it was going to happen, right? But it's not there yet, so.
Right, and plus, so I went to the hosted session. Did any of you go to the hosted provider session after Gurdeep's session? Were you there? So they talked about all the issues with, well, I won't say issues, this won't be very functional, can I put it like that? The cloud solution that Microsoft is offering, and I went up afterward, and I said, so if I want this thing from AT&T, because you know on the slide Gurdeep showed, it said AT&T and who, Verizon? I can't remember the third one. I said, where do you get those? Do I go to Microsoft, you know, like I do now, office365.com, and sign up and click and give my credit card? No, you have to go to those providers and get it, okay? So if you're working in Brazil and you work for, who, Telefonica? Microsoft. Okay. Well, Telefonica could do this in Brazil, right? Or, yeah, okay. So they could be offering that. Okay. All right, so let's look at the next case then. And this is IM and conferencing only, again with EAS licensing. So on the left-hand side, again, we'll see that the Microsoft on-premises solution, if you're going to do IM in presence and conferencing on-prem, if you choose to do that, then with EAS licensing, you're going to have a pretty good bargain if it's against the IP PBX solution that effectively, you know, so Microsoft does it different. The approach is completely different. With the IP PBX solution, you buy the PBX stuff, and then you overlay it with their conferencing and collaboration solutions. With Microsoft, you have the IM in presence, and then you overlay that with a Link standard license to get the conferencing. And so you don't have to have all the
Link
voice.
It's an enterprise cow. Enterprise.
Yeah, sorry, the enterprise cow. Okay. So in this case, Link on-prem is about 20% favorable, again, if you're using EAS. And we can do the calculations with non-EAS if somebody were interested.
And we've got to normalize from those usage profiles. We have a normalized set of numbers of conferences, the mix of audio, video, and web in those conferences. So this is like for like.
Yeah, right.
Like for like.
Right. The interesting thing here is on the right-hand side, this is the Microsoft Cloud versus the competitive cloud. And again, this would be the WebEx cloud, frankly, that we priced. The words down below that on the right-hand side, this is link to link, not link to the competitor product. So it's link on-prem to link cloud. And you can see that the Office 365 solution, if you're going to do IM in presence and conferencing, is extremely cost-effective. And so you can say, well, gee, what if I already have my link on-prem servers and so forth, and I just need to add people that only need conferencing, and they're not going to have a phone or they don't need enterprise voice, what would you do? Well, if you look at the costs here, on the left-hand side, the one-time costs are $334,000. You see those at the bottom. Let me move the mouse over there so you can see those. Okay? So that's the one-time cost. Then you have the annual service and the operating cost, and you divide that by 5,000, and you're roughly at $1,000 a user, basically.
For 5 years.
For 5 years, right? If you look on the left-hand side, you have your operating and annual service costs are at about, let's say, $2.5 million, okay? And you divide that by 5,000, so they're about half. And so even if you're only looking at the ongoing operating costs and you already have, you know, your on-prem servers, you still may want to be thinking about Office 365. For those that only need those capabilities. Again, you're going to want to profile people to make sure that will fit for them.
Yeah, I think, Brent, that we're going to see a lot of hybrid work over the next 10 to 20 years. I think a lot of customers, it's already happening. I mean, if you're buying, you know, sales management software, you can buy it in the cloud from a lot of different vendors, but you may still keep your databases on-premise. You know, so I think we're going to see not just in communications, but across the application portfolio, we're going to see hybrid as a way of life. And this is saying that it may be an economical way of life, too.
Right. Thank you, Marty. Okay, so before I go to the next group of slides, any comments, any questions?
Maybe just a quick question. go to Office 365, what do you include in the operating versus annual services? Mm-hmm. You pay Microsoft or whatever it is, $10 a month.
Yes, right.
Sorry, Brent, would you mind repeating that question?
Oh, excuse me. So the question was, with the Office 365, what's included in those costs, right?
Yep.
Okay. So effectively, what we've done is we have used the Office 365 plans, okay, as you can see them on the website, and of course we know there's some discounting for volumes and so forth, but that's where the numbers come from. Does that make sense? And you're welcome to push back if those are
the wrong numbers. He was also asking, I think, Brent, about what we put in the operating cost number. And the answer is it includes the bandwidth required to haul the traffic back and forth. And that was about it, I think. It's mostly bandwidth. Because there's no on-premise rack space. We had gateway costs, but other than that, no rack space, no power, and we didn't put an operating staff in.
Right. And actually, as I'm thinking about that, you know when you do your conferencing and it's up in the cloud, then you do have a bandwidth cost for that, a WAN cost, I will say, versus a LAN cost. And as I think about that, Marty, we probably need to add that in because the conferencing is going to be about what, 100 kilobits per second per user?
Well, it depends on whether we've got the mix of A, B, and W, audio, video, web sharing, and all different. So
yeah, but if you're just doing conferencing, screen share. Yeah.
We'll validate. By the way, we could have said in the beginning, part of our commitment to Barry is to write a white paper that will be available to you. So besides this session, which you can look at and listen to, give us about 3 weeks. We wanted to hear your questions so that the white paper also reflected those. But we'll nail down these details in the white paper too. So it's on its way.
Yeah, and if you have any suggestions for us or...
Yeah, let us know.
Excuse the French, but if you think we're full of bull, just let us know. We welcome pushback because it helps us learn. It helps us grow. And to do things better, okay? And so particularly from somebody like yourself where you've deployed a lot of these in your company, you know, pushback. We would welcome it, okay?
Right.
And if you have numbers to help us validate, we would welcome that too. Was there a question or a comment here?
On the 365 admin cost, did you include any administration costs with the cloud for administering the cloud and troubleshooting?
We put in just a little bit of cost for that. We call it vendor admin sorts of costs. And I think it's like 0.2 FTEs per some number of employees, per 1,000 seats or something like that. Okay, so there is a number in there. Okay, I don't know if that's the right number, and it may be different for different companies, but there is a cost there.
Right.
Okay? All right, please.
Use the microphone if you can when you're speaking.
Sorry,
it's
guys.
It's important.
The problem is we have such a loaded schedule here that there are other sessions running. People can't make this one. But they're still going to listen to the session later on. So if you could, all the sessions will be available for attendees. But it won't make sense if they hear a big gap and then an answer.
Right.
Oh, I better repeat that last question. And the previous question was, have we included costs for admin of the Office 365 solution? And we responded that we do have some cost included in there. Okay. Now, please, your question.
My question is really on the workload that was prior to this, where there was enterprise voice as well. Was there a reason that hybrid was not involved or hybrid was not calculated as an option? Because since it looks like, you know, that's the current and the future right now. So was there a reason that we didn't have that?
No, not a good one. No, we just didn't do it. Could we do it? Yeah, we probably could do that. And in fact, we could probably back into it.
Yeah, the model could estimate it.
Because we know the cost of just the conferencing and so forth. We could get there. We just didn't do it. Okay? It wasn't part of the work that Microsoft asked us to give. It wasn't a number. So Barry, if you say, give us that number, we'll give it to you. Okay? All right. No, but that's a really good question. And I think Marty's going to comment on that later about this, more on this idea of hybrid solutions. Okay, so I'm going to just show you a quick little heat map. And so for those of you unfamiliar with a heat map, we've done this one in red and green, and the idea here is that the red is bad and the green is good. Okay? And so what this is an on-premises versus a cloud comparison, and I'm going to use the mouse here so that you can see this. So this is enterprise voice and conferencing, okay? And this is It's Link Cloud versus Link on-premises. And you can see that for enterprise voice and conferencing, oh, one other thing I should say, this is without the operating costs included. So if you look at a heat map and you don't include your operating costs, well, you can see clearly across the board that the Link Cloud is way more expensive than the Link on-premises solution based on this top line and all the red squares. If you look at conferencing only, you can see, well, there's a couple of places where it could still make sense, but then you quickly get into the red. Now, I have to emphasize, this does not have the operating costs. The point I want to make here is that if you don't include the operating costs, then you'll come up to a false conclusion. So this graph is the very same heat map, but we've included the operating costs. So the conclusion here is, down at the very low number of users, like 500 roughly in that ballpark, then it's really a wash. You buy the Link solution or you buy the competitive solution, your pricing is going to be about the same from a TCO perspective.
No. This is Link Cloud versus premise. It's not the competitor.
Oh, excuse me.
Sorry.
Sorry, Morty.
This is Cloud versus premise. Link.
Thank you for
that
correction. This is Link. So if you buy Link Online and use our solution from Connected Solutions from our friends there, then it's roughly a wash with Link on-prem versus Link in the cloud. That includes enterprise voice, a full enterprise voice deployment, okay? And then it quickly goes red here across the top, which is sort of what we've been saying, that the on-premises solutions are less expensive. But you can see that they're not that much less expensive. And so if you have some reason for moving to the cloud, in addition to just TCO, and I know of 8 or 9 different other reasons besides just TCO for moving to the cloud, then this gives you a sense for what your cost for that decision may be. Okay, but then you also have a lot of other benefits by moving to the cloud as well. If you do conferencing only, it's green across the board based on the analysis that we've done.
Which goes to your hybrid point earlier.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay, so this next case, we've now included Contact Center. And the Contact Center that we included was Interactive Intelligence's Contact Center because it competes favorably in the market with the competitive product. Please.
I have a real quick question on the last slide. Are you including PSTN access in your comparison?
So we've done SIP trunking in there.
So it's SIP trunking both with the cloud and internal?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay, so this is including the Contact Center. This is the Interactive Intelligence Contact Center versus the Contact Center from the PBX manufacturer. And on the right-hand side in the cloud, again, we're using the Interactive Intelligence Contact Center that's cloud-based, fully deployed up in the cloud, versus the IP PBX solution from the third-party vendor that we know that hosts an HCS solution. And you can see here again on the bottom, Link on-prem versus the IP is favorable, again with EAS licensing. On-premises versus cloud, the Link on-prem solution is more favorable than the Link cloud solution. Now we've added video. And for any of you who have deployed video, these costs escalate pretty rapidly. So originally when Marty was showing you the first case of 5,000 that had the full stack, okay, the total cost for the on-premises solution was roughly about $7 million, I would say. Mm-hmm. When you now add Contact Center and you add the video, you're now up to about $14 million. And so the Contact Center adds roughly about $3 and the video adds roughly about $4, okay? So video is very expensive when we do that. But the good news is, if you're going to deploy one of these Link Room systems, they're way less expensive than the competitive offerings, okay? And with that, I'll turn it back over to Marty.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Brent. So just a few thoughts then. We said we'd talk about what this might mean in your decision-making. You've already sussed this out, many of you, by virtue of your questions. You've figured out where some of the sweet spots are. So prepare usage profiles. We think it's really important to you to do that. It will help guide your licensing, and that'll drive to the configurations, which will drive to the total cost. It may affect your operating costs in doing that. So really important to prepare usage profiles. If you're doing a TCO analysis compared to an IP PBX of most brands, that will also influence the licensing on the other side. So you want to be sure it's done. Be on the best licensing plan, and that's true wherever you go, but we've already suggested to you that there may be some sweet spots in the Microsoft licensing picture that match your needs, so that's important. The next several, I'm going to have a follow-on slide, so I'll just say what they are. Look at modular approaches, and UC applications favor Link, and I'll come back to what that means. Hybrid or blended solutions may be optimal. Take control of operating costs, and that Link is designed for office communications. And this is my opinion primarily. I don't start by thinking of Link as an IP PBX. I think voice is a workflow. It's a workload within a workflow. It's not an IP PBX. And if you need a gateway to do fax machines, then keep part of a PBX to do that. So that's my opinion. And think of it as an application platform as well. Personally, on behalf of my clients, I was thrilled to hear about the Java wrapper around the web API. I mean, this is just going to drive communication into web portals, which is where it belongs, in my opinion. So consider the modular approach over time. What we learned from this modeling is this is a building block thing. No matter whether you're buying an IP PBX version or a Link version or whatever, think about it as building blocks. So in the case of Link, Office and Outlook, you're probably using those already. That's part of why you have Link, I would expect. And so if you think about starting with IM Presence, point-to-point, voice and video, you could do this on-premise or Office 365. And if I listen to what I hear in the industry, Microsoft is the world leader in doing this for business enterprises. 70-plus, maybe 80-plus market share of IM and Presence on the desktop. And you say, oh, that means I've already got voice and video out there for users. Oh, it's not enterprise telephony. It's not PSTN. Oh, too bad, but everybody internal to the company can make a voice and video call and share a document. Oh, okay, I must have UC. So I'm already on the UC path. I can add in the conferencing because now they need to collaborate and multi-party and so forth. I may still be internally, or I may expose this to my customers and clients. I could begin having collaborative sessions with my business clients on a B2B basis, my supply chains, or with my customers. I could begin doing this without getting to enterprise voice. I also could add mobility to that. I mean, Brent and I are both Office 365 users in our professional life, and we both carry around mobile clients. I can be mobile with this without getting to enterprise voice. I can also add applications to it. Now, if I do apps, I'm probably back to saying I'm on-prem, because Office 365 doesn't really give me API access. It's a closed world. Maybe that'll change someday, but for now, I'd end up putting that portion maybe on-prem. But I could do an on-prem server that federates out to the Office 365 cloud. I don't have to make everybody on-prem to let that happen. And I might do a second app, like another web portal or something like we saw a demo this morning. I still haven't touched enterprise voice. And at that point, maybe I start doing enterprise voice for certain usage profiles. And this is what we often find with our clients, is that the decision to deploy enterprise voice or IP telephony with an IP PBX doesn't have to be enterprise-wide. And one of the worst business decisions, one of the worst economics of all, is to replace all of the phones and all of your legacy IP PBX that still works with a new IP PBX. You'll lose 2 or 3 years on your roadmap, and you'll spend a lot of money replacing a phone that looks the same and does the same for the user. And you'll end up with an IP PBX headache, I call it. The user's saying, you spent all that money, what did you do for me? And the answer is, well, the dial tone is almost as good. And so you don't want to go there. You don't need to. Brent, you want to add to that?
Could I just add, I'm going to put in a plug for one of the partners that's here. I was at a private meeting yesterday with Audio Codes, and when you get to this point in your roadmap that Marty's talking about here, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. And they talked, a number of the users, these were large companies that were using the Audio Codes gateways. A key takeaway for me is that you can put in one of those gateways, and then if so you can transition at your own pace. And so the way the system works, when a call comes in, the SBC looks at whether it's a Link user. If it is, it routes it to Link. If it's not, it just keeps it on the same PBX.
Right.
And so there's a ton of flexibility that you can do here.
Right.
And so I only throw that in because so many people were using that functionality.
And the other thing I would say about that, you may say, why am I showing modularity like this in a TCO presentation? The answer is everything I've shown to you up till now is Link is absolutely less costly, whether it's CAL licensing or EAS licensing, than anything you can buy in the market from an IP PBX company. That's what the model will show you. So from a TCO perspective, you're in the green so far, whichever licensing model you use. Yes, sir.
Just out of curiosity, in one of your beginning slides, you had all the major manufacturers up there comparing, you know, cloud on-premise solutions. So going further into your presentation, it was just Link versus IP PBX. So
Right. Do
you have numbers with Link versus like the major players like Cisco, Avaya, or is it just a blend of all those numbers labeling all of them as IP PBXs?
Well, the numbers that are in this model are based on a specific IP PBX, but we certainly can put other brands into that, and of course it'll be exactly what we said before. It'll depend on the correct licensing, and then the rest is all about discounting. And if you know the discount percentages, I'm just saying, I mean, our clients, the type of discounts off of list that they see in the IP PBX world across all brands usually are a two-digit number starting with a 5 and sometimes a 6. Off of list.
Sometimes a seven.
And so the point is, you know, it's not their list prices, it's the street pricing, and we've got that in the model.
Right.
The model's reflecting that kind of street pricing.
Now, I'm going to put in a not so shameless plug. That graph that you saw earlier that showed all the vendors across the bottom. So we have a report that actually shows all of the numbers for all of those vendors.
Different report.
It's not the one that we did for Microsoft. This is one that we did completely independently. And so that is available, and if there's interest, just contact one of us. Okay?
Thank you.
So anyway, so then you can tell that at some point you do the whole enterprise, but you know it's the incremental. The second is hybrid approach may be best. I think you've already grasped this. IAM presence conferencing, maybe some simple client-based apps. By the way, I could be doing client-side apps, you know, Link client apps off against Office 365. So it's only if I start doing server apps that I may need that I need on-premise. And then on-premise or dedicated hosted could be optimal for enterprise voice. You know, it's necessary. Contact center and CEBP or server-based app implementations. And then Brent and I wanted to share this slide, that if you're not moving to enterprise voice soon, you know, one of the myths here is you have to get a new IP PBX to do unified communications. That's bunk. And so if you want to change your business with unified communications by providing IAM presence to people, conferencing and mobility, you don't have to wait for an IP PBX. So you can say, I don't need to change dial tone. It works. I'm going to work on UC on a roadmap, and 5 years from now, I'll see how many phones I still need. Then a cloud-based Link approach might be really, really attractive, Brent, right? That's what we're trying to say. Yeah, good. And then if you're moving to enterprise voice, then a cloud-based Link solution provides enterprise voice, will show a higher TCO than the on-premise, as we said, except down at the 500 user
yeah,
level.
Right. So if you're just looking for conferencing, the online is way better.
It's all green.
If you're going to do the enterprise voice, then thus far the premises-based is the way to go.
Yep. So a few things on operating costs. Get a handle on the operating costs is difficult. We told you we did this with survey data. You know, one analyst firm published 3 different reports within an 18-month span with first-year costs of operational costs for Link ranging from $714 to $1,912 per user for the first-year operating costs. I mean, go figure. I think, by the way, that's mostly because they're surveying people who have very low numbers of deployments. They're doing pilots with Link with 50 employees. Well, you hire an SI to put in the system, it's going to be the same number of servers as if you had 1,000 employees, except you divide by 50, you get a big number. You also want to do a sanity check. We did a sanity check against the required staff roles, and we already described this in some of the answers earlier, so I won't dwell on it. But you know, you can look at this slide afterwards. It'll be available to you within 48 hours with the audio track. But it's just all the different pieces you need for network and QoS and those kind of pieces. They all add up. And then also in terms of operating costs, be sure if you're going to think about TCO, if your company is into a TCO environment, that's what you'll have to go to the CFO before you get an approval, then you want to baseline where you are today. I think about one university that's a client of ours, and in the engagement, I started counting how many people they had to run a 20,000-user, 15-year-old PBX. It was a huge number. They had about 30 people running this thing. Now, they were spread around. They had all different titles and so forth. But you want to baseline where you are before you go, you know, comparing yourself, you know, to a new purchase. Compare yourself to where you are. You can automate or instrument the system management, and I think this is going to be the next wave in this industry. Is a lot of instrumentation there and automation. Use self-service and self-care. There are some partners even here that are saying, "Hey, we've got pre-done portals to let the user self-administer their Link account." Okay, that may be helpful. And, of course, those that are in the cloud probably have those tools already. Track help desk usage and use UC tools there. You can streamline your help desk, bring those costs down, and then integrate simply with the desktop and device support. I'm going to show you something on the next slide. Promote user self-sufficiency, and then evolve your organization for UC. Converge your desktop and device. Take your telecom and your desktop teams and put them together because they're all IP devices. You know, quit having two teams going out on dispatch. Evolve use, and by the way, use some of the desktop provisioning models for the IP phones and devices you put out there. Evolve UC as a software app on IT networks and on servers. I could say IP as well, but on the information technology networks and servers. Some people who sell a lot of devices want you to think about UC as an infrastructure play, as plumbing. It's not. It's an application play. So think about it that way. Now, Unicom Consulting has been asked this question a lot. In 2008, we wrote a white paper for our clients in April that year. In August that year, October that year, I think it was rather, Gartner came out with a very interesting white paper on the same topic. And here's a picture out of that white paper. I bought a copy, so it's my picture to share with you. But the point is, this is their view of the evolution of organizations in the UC world, where you can go study this later. I don't need to present the whole chart in detail. But they're saying by 2020, what we know is the UC is going to be part of your applications team, okay, not part of your infrastructure team. So you're serving users, you're helping users do their job. That's an application. So you want to be careful about that evolution. And if you do that right, this will be another way to use total cost of ownership as a guide. Am I actually reducing my costs by streamlining my organization? By the way, this just chart for your future reference has the Gartner research number on it, so you can go pull that chart down if you're a subscriber. And then it's designed for office communications. It's the only native UC solution for office. And you know, every vendor out there in the IPPBX world now has a plug-in for office. They say, we'll plug our UC in there. And many times they'll plug it in to, say, the Link client, and then they'll block the Link audio video by hacking the registry. Now, you can make them unhack the registry so that the Link users can still do peer-to-peer, and then when they want to make a voice call, they use the PBX. Maybe that's a good idea. But the point is, it's still a plug-in. It's not native. And you know, business communication is a blend of these things. I don't have a single client who isn't doing multiples in volume of email and multiples in volume of IM compared to the volume of telephone calls. The volume of telephone calls is declining on a per transaction basis. So you really want to think about this in terms of how is it going to fit in my workflow, and if I'm in a document-centric role, I'm probably going to be here, not over on the telephone. There are particular purposes for voice and video, but you know, usage profiles will be a guide to that. And then lastly, Link is a UC applications platform, and the way you get the new value, I won't say more because we're late on time. I've done a couple other sessions, one this morning, one on Thursday. But applications are where you're going to get the value out of this. And Link is a great platform with that, with its APIs. By the way, the richest API set. The only competitor to this, I'd say, is IBM with their WebSphere platform underneath IBM Connections. But that makes the point, again, that it's a document-centric world, and the applications-based companies, the software-based companies, are leading that way, not the plumbing-based companies. So just an opinion. So, Brent, let's recap this. So we say the comparisons are going to vary widely based on workloads. So we've talked about that.
And we have found that Link TCO, it's competitive to the leading, to the competitive product that most of you have already looked at and priced.
Right. And we'd say that operational costs demand some attention for your best TCO.
And I hate to read these. Cloud offerings have an attractive TCO for some workloads. Okay? Now, as I said, I've written a bunch of documents on cloud-based solutions and why, in addition to just looking at TCO, you should look at cloud-based offerings. Okay? And so there's a bunch of other reasons for doing that besides just that dollar, because there's some other multipliers that you can see there.
Right, I agree. In fact, we're doing a session on the main stage at Enterprise Connect on that very topic, so it's a topic we're talking about. Consider modular and hybrid approaches was one of my points. And with that, I'll leave it up there, so we just to recap and summary any questions you might have about it. So, Barry?
Yeah, so fabulous. Thank you for the detail.
You're welcome.
I know there's more hidden behind there.
There is.
One of the commitments we have is that we'll have a follow-up on this. So. Right. Watch this space. I wanted to just mention another session that you might want to attend. So on Wednesday, in the 8:30 to 9:45 time frame, you have BVAL 201. This is entitled "Understanding the Total Economic Impact of Link 2013 on Your Business." That session is being done by Paul Cannon, who's sitting here. It was done in conjunction with the independent analyst Forrester and takes a slightly different approach to the one that's been done here. It is using customer surveys and questionnaires to arrive at a similar conclusion around total economic impact. So on the one hand, you have that approach, which is somewhat subjective. This is hard numbers. And independent analysts analysis of the actual cost of owning the system. Great session.
Yeah. Just to comment on that before you say your next thing, is this is total cost of ownership. We did not talk about the benefits.
Right.
This is just the cost. The benefits is another discussion, and the economic impact will probably include that. Good.
So the other point I wanted to make is I'd like to hear a little bit further the detail, because I know we talked about this in the past. The detail behind why, when you talk to some people, they'll say, I look at a move in the direction of Link as being quite costly for me in terms of operating costs. Whereas, other customers who are already maybe a Microsoft shop, it means less to them. What is driving that? Is it really endemic in the product, or has it got something to do with organization?
Do you want to respond, Marty?
I'll start. Sure, I'll start on that one. So Barry's asking, why would they say, well, it was more expensive? I think the rest of that is it's more expensive than I thought, and I got surprised. Because I think that clients are often given the impression, you're already licensed for Link. Ever heard that statement, anybody?
It's free.
Sure.
You're
already licensed,
right?
For Link. It's already in your enterprise agreement. And then they start getting the racks of servers, and then they start saying, oh, and I want it redundant, and I want it resilient, and I think I need some small branch appliances because I don't have a resilient enough WAN environment. And then I think I need a lot of a bandwidth to my external people. And so it's easy to get this added up. I also will say, I had this happen in a client the other day, last month actually. They got the project approved. It was well justified. And then everybody else showed up to ride the wagon. So all these other latent costs, the things they should have fixed in their network years ago, get added into the justification for the Link investment. So there's the free ride approach that's another part of that. I think it's often shock and surprise as opposed to candid realism, because if they can do the realism, they'll find out, as we did, that Link is a competitive solution.
Right. I think in that case, you were, if I recall, Marty, the telephony had become a profit center.
Oh, that too, yeah.
For the organization, you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, the telephony became a profit center, and so when the people were thinking about looking at Link, it's like, oh man, we've been funding this giant network update based out of the profits from what we're charging, you know, people throughout the organization. What are we going to do now?
Yeah, and we can't get. I won't say what their number was. We can't get that amount per user for Link, so we're going to lose all the profit we've been pouring into the other side.
Right.
Anyway, there's a lot of reasons. Go ahead.
Please.
Thanks a lot, gents. This was really good. And the benefits comment was, I chuckled. I'm very biased. I work for Microsoft, but it's almost apples to oranges when you think about benefits, personal opinion. You talked about the 5,000 seat comparisons throughout. I'm curious, when you get up to the 50,000, was it the same relative results, or did you see anything fundamentally different?
The results seemed to follow a pattern from what we could tell. And we did not see any anomalies from the 5,000 case. We could have run any number between 500 and 50,000. As we mentioned, the 500 case, that particular range is a little bit different because you're buying so many servers to get the capability for so few users. But once you get past a certain point, we didn't see a difference in patterns.
Awesome.
Yeah, maybe a point or two variation, but not 10 or 20%. And then, of course, as you go down towards 500, there is a floor. If you're going to remember, we had resilience, we had redundancy everywhere in here. So there's a floor in terms of the numbers of servers it takes to do that workload. And when you hit that floor, your price doesn't go down much, even if you take more users out.
Could I invite pushback? So what didn't we cover that we should have? You know, please.
Use the mic, please.
If you could use the mic.
Yep, sorry.
Okay.
Chris Wagner, Microsoft.
And we believe in equal opportunity criticism, because that's what we do.
Outstanding. We're making an awful big deal about the difference in our release cadence for both on-prem products and cloud. Mm-hmm. How do you reflect that in terms of the TCO calculation?
Differences in the what?
In the cadence of the releases.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. The quarterly releases is what Gurdeep was mentioned up on the slides.
Good question.
I guess it wraps up into your operating costs, right? Because when you release that, is that free to the organization to deploy those? I ask, is it better to have that rapid of a cadence, particularly for the on-premises solutions?
And most of our clients won't. You may be releasing every 3 months. Microsoft may have adopted a 3-month release cycle, but most of our large enterprise clients will probably, you know, do an every other or every third or fourth release, unless it's really important. Like I've got somewhere, the Android tablet is an issue, and as soon as that release hits, they're going to be on it. Okay, so because the, you know, releases, best practices in the ITIL world, I mean, you're going to have a test lab, you're going to go through validation, your security and risk people are going to analyze that release, they're going to pound on it and hammer on it, try to break it, they're going to look at intrusion management and so forth. So it's new code to them. Even though to Microsoft it's only a tweak on a module that displays information on an Android tablet, as far as the customer is concerned, they have to think of it as all new code.
But your question is good. We were talking to a customer yesterday, and they run Vista?
They're the one.
I guess the last one left. I guess there's maybe a few running XP, right? Because I know a company that runs XP still. Okay, but so I think your question's a good one, and I think it would be wrapped up in those operating costs. Really, it's the people cost to get to keep these systems going and maintained. And just a gut feeling would be, if you're doing releases more often, that cost can only go up.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes sense because you have more to do. And if you're doing it quarterly, I think, like Marty said, companies will choose to do those on a less frequent basis, probably, particularly those that have these baselines and they have thousands of users, and you have to include that in what they release and install on their machines. I just think that they're not going to do it quarterly.
And it may probably. even be. Some of our clients, the larger global ones, they're deploying their Link systems in multiple systems dedicated to worker types, to profiles. So they may say, I need that release for my mobile salespeople, and I'll only upgrade that module. I'll upgrade that system. So let's say they have five hubs around the globe, five link systems. Then they don't have to do them all. It's another way to keep their costs down, right? So they may get asynchronous across the systems because they'll interoperate. So there's some strategies around that. So we're at the end of our time. We probably should adjourn because we're going to be joining in the Ask the Expert session so we can continue talking with you over the next 2 hours.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Marty and Brian.
Thank you. Thanks to you all.